Have you always thought the Old Testament feasts were only for Israel? If so, you may be in for a surprise today, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Shalom, and welcome to Messianic Perspectives, a daily program where we look into the scriptures from a distinctive first century Jewish point of view. Today, our Bible teacher is Dr. Gary Hedrick, president of CJF Ministries. Gary's topic for this current series of studies is the Spring Feasts of the Lord. He's explaining how the seven feasts in Leviticus 23 are not only significant in themselves, but also how they collectively form an exciting outline of God's prophetic plan leading up to the Second Coming. I'll be back at the close of the program to tell you about our special offer. And now, with today's installment, here's Gary Hedrick.
All right, thank you, and welcome, listening friend, to another edition of Messianic Perspectives. It's good to have you with us today as we continue this study of the Feasts of the Lord. And we're zeroing in specifically on the Spring Feasts, and if you have a Bible handy, why don't you turn with us to Leviticus chapter 23, and you can follow along with the study. Today we're continuing our discussion of Passover, which is the first of the Spring Feasts. In Hebrew, we call it Pesach. We said last time that Passover is discussed more in the Bible than any other observance, with the exception of Shabbat. Passover is mentioned 45 times in the Old Testament and then 28 times in the New Testament. That's a total of 73 mentions of Passover in the Bible, more than any other feast. Chag Shavuot, or the Feast of Pentecost, is mentioned 3 times in the New Testament. Chag Hamatzot is the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and that's mentioned 9 times in the New Testament. And then Sukkot, or the Feast of Tabernacles, is mentioned 2 times, and that's in John chapter 7. And we were talking about the fact that all of the major events in the New Testament revolve around the Jewish calendar. And the Jewish calendar revolves around the observance of the feasts of the Lord. In the Gospels, what do you find them doing? Well, they're in the temple observing the feasts of the Lord and doing the other Jewish observances according to the Jewish calendar. In the book of Acts, you've got the Apostle Paul, and what is he doing? He's going up to Jerusalem for this feast or for that feast and paying his vows in the temple and all that sort of thing. You see, as Gentile Christians, we too often lose sight of the fact that Christianity is essentially Jewish. Now, it's true, over a long period of time, Christianity, or Christendom, evolved into more of a Gentile entity, especially the Roman version of Christianity that Constantine developed in the 4th century. That's definitely a Gentile concoction. So a lot of people look at modern Christendom, or Catholicism, or Eastern Orthodoxy, or whatever it may be. There's really not all that much difference between them. And they think that's the way it's always been. But I want to tell you something, my friend. That's not the way it's always been. Christianity was originally a messianic movement within Judaism, or some people would say it was a messianic movement within a branch of Judaism. You see, there were several different forms of Judaism in the first century during the Second Temple period, and the early Jewish Christians were mostly associated with the Pharisees. In fact, the Apostle Paul was a Pharisee, and he wrote most of the New Testament. The Pharisees, or the Purushim, were the ones who believed in a literal interpretation of the prophecies, and they believed in a literal coming of the Messiah. Their big rivals, especially in the temple, were the Sadducees, or the Tzedukim. The Sadducees wanted to spiritualize everything instead of accepting it literally. They didn't believe in much of anything supernatural. They didn't believe in angels. They didn't believe in a resurrection. They didn't believe in an afterlife. They didn't believe in future prophecies or any of that sort of thing. The one area where we would have agreed with the Sadducees more than the Pharisees was in the fact that they used only the Bible. They had no oral tradition. They were more like the Samaritans in that respect. No oral tradition, only the Bible. Of course, it would have helped if they had interpreted the Bible correctly, but at least they understood that only the Bible has authority. The Pharisees, on the other hand, had this highly evolved oral tradition, or oral Torah, This was a whole body of oral traditions passed down from one generation to another, and their tradition says that it was given to Moses at the same time God gave him the written Torah. So according to the Pharisees, you have two Torahs, one that was written down in the five books of Moses, and another one that was passed down orally from one generation to the next. You see, this is what some people don't understand. They think, well, you know, the Talmud is a relatively recent document. They didn't put it together until hundreds of years after the time of Christ. And that's true. The Talmud was committed to writing in the 3rd, 4th, and 5th centuries AD. But you see, the oral tradition itself existed long before that. The things that were committed to writing 300 or 400 years after the temple was destroyed, many of those strains of teachings existed long before the Christian era. So it's misleading to say that the Talmud only goes back 1500 or 1600 years, because parts of it go back much farther than that. And maybe we'll talk sometime about where the oral tradition actually started, because I think we make a mistake when we just toss the whole oral tradition out the window. And I understand the Bible, as Messianic believers, the Bible is our final and only authority as far as Scripture is concerned. But I also think there's a wealth of information and insight to be gleaned from certain parts of the oral tradition. And in fact, this is a good lead-in for our discussion today, because we're going to talk about the Passover. And in fact, the Passover Seder that Jewish people follow today in their observance of Pesach is derived mainly from tradition. Did you know that? The Passover Seder that Yeshua and his disciples observed in Matthew 26 and in the other Gospels was a traditional Passover meal. It is based mainly on Jewish oral tradition. You say, Gary, what do you mean by that? Well, I mean the Bible itself doesn't tell us how the Israelites observed the first Passover when they were getting ready to leave Egypt. It doesn't tell us how they observed it in subsequent years, as they were supposed to observe the Passover year after year after year. And look right here in Leviticus 23, since you're already there anyway. All it says is that we're supposed to observe the Passover at twilight on the 14th day of the month. You can even go back to Exodus chapter 12. We're not going to take time to do that today. But all it says is that you're supposed to take an unblemished lamb, slaughter it at twilight, and apply the blood to the doorposts of your home. Then you roast the meat over a fire, along with bitter herbs and unleavened bread or matzah. And then it says they were supposed to eat it in a hurry with their sandals on, so they would be ready to depart on a moment's notice. And that's it. That's all the Bible says about the observance of Passover. It doesn't tell us what they said as they went through the Passover meal. It doesn't tell us if the whole family participated, and if so, what each member of the family did. It doesn't tell us if they had anything to drink with the Passover meal. It doesn't tell us how the bitter herbs were to be prepared. It doesn't tell us anything about the seating arrangement at the Passover meal. It doesn't tell us how they blessed the food or if they blessed it at all. It doesn't give us any of these details, and yet those details are all given in the Jewish oral tradition. Now, I realize that alone does not prove that the oral tradition is true. And in fact, much of the oral tradition is not true. I mean, the oral tradition, the Talmud, might give us the name of Moses' pet dog, Rover, but that wouldn't mean it was true. The Talmud has a way of filling in those details almost to the point of ad nauseum, things that would never even occur to the average person. And in the tractates of the Talmud, they'll argue back and forth about what certain things mean or about some point of halakha, Jewish law. One rabbi says this, and then another rabbi says that, and then Rabbi Akiva comes along and says they're both wrong. It goes on and on like that. So yes, it's true. There's a lot of foolishness that has crept into the oral tradition over the centuries. Even most Jewish scholars recognize that. It's really only the ultra-Orthodox who say the Talmud is inspired by God, and that it was actually given to Moses on Mount Sinai along with the Torah. Most Jewish scholars know that's not the case. But I think we make a mistake when we throw the baby out with the bathwater, because there are some very interesting teachings in the Talmud, and it's the Mishnah, which is part of the Talmud, that fills in the details about the traditional Jewish Passover celebration. Now, you might say bah humbug about the Talmud and about Jewish tradition, but let me tell you something. When you actually see the Jewish Passover Seder, and by the way, the word Seder means order. In other words, it's the order in which things are done. And so when you actually see the Passover Seder or the Passover meal, the way it's done according to Jewish tradition, you will be amazed at how it points so clearly and unmistakably to the Messiah. In fact, some Jewish scholars have suggested that the Passover ritual as it exists today may have been influenced by Messianic believers at some point centuries ago, because the symbolism is so clear. By the way, if you think your church would be interested in having one of our representatives come and demonstrate the Passover, all you have to do is call us on our toll-free number, and we'll be glad to put you in touch with one of our representatives, whoever is nearest you. Any of our workers are qualified to demonstrate the Passover, and you'll be amazed at the Messianic symbolism. There are 4 cups of wine during the course of the Seder, and then you have Koso Shel Eliyahu, the cup of Elijah, where they fill the cup with wine, but they don't drink it, because it's reserved for Elijah, whom they believe will come as a forerunner of the Messiah to announce the coming of the Messiah. In fact, they also have an empty chair reserved, just in case Elijah shows up. And there's a point in the Passover Seder where a child will go and open the door and look outside to see if Elijah is coming. And we're not going to have time to get into Elijah too much here in this study, but if you'd like to hear how this whole subject of Elijah at Passover fits in with New Testament teaching, you need to get our tape entitled The Second Coming of Elijah. I think you'll find it fascinating. Just call us and we'll tell you how to get it. And we'll give you the number in just a moment. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We'll continue this discussion of the spring feasts on the next program. Until then, this is your friend Gary Hedrick saying, God bless you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gary. And thank you, listening friend, for tuning in today. It's always good to have you with us, whether you're listening from home, at work, or in your car. This is Messianic Perspectives, and you've been listening to Dr. Gary Hedrick talking about the Spring Feasts of the Lord, the 7 annual meetings outlined in Leviticus 23. We have all the programs in this series available in a set of 3 CDs packaged in an attractive binder for a suggested contribution of just $18. That's the 3 CDs entitled The Spring Feasts of the Lord by Dr. Gary Hedrick for a gift of only $18. Just visit our secure online store at messianicspecialties.com to place your order. If you would prefer to order by mail, just address your request to Messianic Perspectives, P.O. Box 345, San Antonio, Texas, 78292. To order by phone, use our toll-free order line from the U.S. The number is 1-800-926-5397. Let me remind you that when you order the materials we offer here on the program, you're not only enabling us to remain here on your station, but you're also helping us take the good news of Yeshua HaMashiach to Jewish people and Gentiles all over the world. So when you write, consider helping us with a gift above the suggested amount. We'd be very grateful. Have you enjoyed this edition of Messianic Perspectives? Why not continue to learn about the Jewish roots of your Christian faith by inviting a speaker from CJF Ministries? Call our toll-free number 1-800-926-5397, and we'll be happy to handle all of the details. And as always, when you're in touch with us, please mention the call letters of this station. If you're listening to our webcast or podcast, we need to know that too. I'm Liz Aiello. Join us next time, won't you, as Dr. Gary Hedrick continues our series of studies on the Spring Feasts of the Lord, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries of San Antonio, Texas, and is made possible on this station by the free will contributions of our listeners in this area.